Good morning, everybody. Today is Monday, August 3rd, 2015. And this is Before the First Cup with Jules here on UCY.TV. Happy Monday, everybody. I can't even believe that we are in August already. This summer has really flown. Sorry about the technical issues. Apparently, I was talking for seven whole minutes, and I still don't know where this audio is coming from. So hold on. We have had haywire crazy all morning. It's so interesting because when I'm searching certain topics, it always seems to happen. It is 71 degrees and overcast here in upstate New York. I hope everyone who got those storms yesterday that were up north of us are okay. There were some major storms I saw, I think, in Chicago as well as in Michigan and up into northern Canada. So I hope everyone is doing fine. We are just enjoying the cool that came after the storm. All right, so where do we leave off? On Thursday, yesterday or Friday, we had Brandon Turville on talking about the Middle East. Forced vaccinations as well as the chicken ID law. We're going to now back the truck up to where we left off last week. The show last Thursday was titled Technocracy, DARPA, and Killer Autonomous Robots. We had looked at a lot of the roboticists and AI professionals around the world inking a petition to stop artificial intelligence and stop the future autonomy of killer robots without human intervention. Some of the biggest names in the industry, including Stephen Hawking and Elon Musk, have inked on to that. We also listened to Carl Sagan in a few different clips, and Carl Sagan had pointed out back in 1996 how Congress had gotten rid of their technology office. So really, there is no one that is advising Congress any longer in regards to technology. And when people don't understand what they're approving, then it is easy for the elite who's controlling this technology to do pretty much whatever they wanted. So anyway, where I'd like to begin this morning is with the creep we love to hate, good old Ray Kurzweil. He had a video back from, it looks like 2013, titled Immortality 2045. And I would then, after we listen to this, I want to continue with a horrifying story that I found out of Wired Magazine this weekend. So anyway, good old Ray Kurzweil, Immortality 2045.
I'm Ray Kurzweil. I'm an inventor, author, and futurist, and I invite you to join me at Global Future 2045, which will be a fabulous congress to explore the brilliant future ahead.
Well, we're going to become increasingly non-biological to the point where the non-biological part predominates and the biological part is not that important anymore. In fact, the non-biological part, the machine part, will be so powerful it can completely model and understand the biological part. So even if that biological part went away, it wouldn't make any difference because the non-biological part already understood it completely.
We'll also have non-biological bodies. We can create bodies with nanotechnology. We can create virtual bodies and virtual reality. The virtual reality will be as realistic as real reality. The virtual bodies will be as detailed and convincing as real bodies. We'll have different ways we can create bodies. We do need a body. Our intelligence is directed towards a body, but it doesn't have to be this frail biological body that's subject to all kinds of failure modes. But
I want to stop for a second because he said a couple of things there that were just pretty shocking. We could have nanotechnology bodies. We could have virtual bodies. We got to have a body. But we can have different kinds of bodies, not ones like the frail human 1.0 bodies.
I think we'll have a choice of bodies. We'll certainly be routinely changing our apparent body in virtual reality. So today you can have a different body in something like Second Life, but it's just a picture on the screen. Although research has shown that people actually begin to subjectively identify with their avatar.
And, you know, don't think that any of these VR games that are out there, like Second Life, I think he mentioned, that I have a few friends who actually play that. And people, they've They've done research. People actually associate themselves with their avatars and really kind of immerse themselves into that virtual world. I really, really think that all of this that's been going on. And remember, too, DARPA Dan, he's a video game developer, all into VR and Google goggles, all the different VR realities. This is all a plan, people. They are sucking us into the matrix with our devices, and it is the last step before people open their arms and want to become part of the machine.
But in the future, it's not going to be a little picture in a virtual environment you're looking at. It'll feel like this is your body and you're in that environment, and that your body is the virtual body, and it can be as realistic as real reality, and the environment can be as realistic as real reality. And so we'll be routinely able to change our bodies very quickly, as well as our environments, in virtual reality, but it will feel very real.
Well, and don't worry about the real world anymore, people, because we'll have this virtual world that we could go into where everything is happy and everything is the way that you like it. And you can make yourself look the way you want to look versus how you really look. So it won't really matter. Don't pay attention to what is going on behind the curtain, because we're going to take care of all that for you.
Well, ultimately, be able to do that with real reality, too, like self-organizing swarms of nanobots.
Oh, my God. Did he just say that? Self-organizing swarms of nanobots. Now that is the stuff that nightmares are made of.
Link themselves up into a virtual body. If we had radical life extension only, we would get profoundly bored. We'd have a profound existential ennui, running out of things to do and new ideas.
Yes, if we were immortal, we would get bored, so we have to come up with a better way.
But that's not what's going to happen. In addition to radical life extension, we're going to have radical life expansion. We're going to have millions of virtual environments to explore. We're going to literally expand our brains. Right now, we only have 300 million pattern recognizers, organized in a grand hierarchy that we create ourselves in our neocortex. But we can make that 300 billion. 300 trillion, we can expand it. The last time we expanded it with the frontal cortex, we created language and art and science. Just think of the qualitative leaps that we can't even imagine today when we expand our neocortex again.
Yes, think of how wonderful it's going to be once you get that DARPA brain implant. It's just going to be utopia everywhere.
We'll be thinking grander, deeper, more hierarchical thoughts than ever before. Creating whole new institutions like art and science that we could not articulate. So we're not going to get bored. If that weren't the case, then I think, you know, living for hundreds, thousands of years would be a profound philosophical nightmare. But instead, we're headed for radical life expansion.
It would be a horrible philosophical nightmare if we got bored. Now, don't forget, the man we love to hate, Mr. Ray Kurzweil, is also the director of engineering at Google. Google is not your friend. Okay, so yesterday I was listening to a show, and there was a caller that called in who mentioned an article back from 2000 in Wired magazine, and I looked that article up because it really piqued my interest. And I need to read some of this to you because it's not by some fly-by-night who doesn't know anything. It was written by Bill Joy, who is the co-founder and chief scientist of Sun Microsystems. If anyone knows anything about Sun, we're talking 15, 20 years back, was already doing clustering and high-end, very high-end computing for government and large computing systems. Typically, you'd find them in a university or in large federal agencies. You had to have special authorization to be able to not only sell Sun Microsystems, but to buy Sun Microsystems. So this guy is no slouch. Anyway, Bill Joy, co-founder and chief scientist of Sun Microsystems, was co-chair of the Presidential Commission on the Future of IT Research, and his co-author of the Java Language Specification. His work on the Gini pervasive computing technology was featured in Wired back in June of 2008. Actually, it looks like June 08 of 2000 because this article is from 2000. Anyway, so this is from Wired Magazine, out of the archives, April of 2000, titled "Why the Future Doesn't Need Us" by Bill Joy, the head of Sun Microsystems. Our most powerful 21st century technologies, robotics, genetic engineering, and nanotech are threatening to make humans an endangered species. From the moment I became involved in the creation of new technologies, their ethical dimensions have concerned me, but it was only in the autumn of 1998 that I became anxiously aware of how great the dangers facing us in the 21st century are. I can date the onset of my unease to the day I met Ray Kurzweil, the deservedly famous inventor of the first reading machine for the blind and many other amazing things. Ray and I were both speakers at the George Gilders Telecom Conference, and I encountered him by chance in the bar of a hotel after both of our sessions were over. I was sitting with John Searle, a Berkeley philosopher who studies consciousness. And while we were talking, Ray approached and a conversation began, the subject which haunts me to this day. I had missed Ray's talk and the subsequent panel that Ray and John had been on, and now they picked right up where they left off, with Ray saying that the rate of improvement of technology was going to accelerate and that we were going to become robots or fuse with robots or something like that, and John countering that this couldn't happen because robots couldn't be conscious. While I had heard such talk before, I had always felt sentient robots were in the realm of science fiction, but now from someone I respected, I was hearing a strong argument that they were a near-term possibility. I was taken aback, especially given Ray's proven ability to imagine and create the future. And I already knew that new technologies like genetic engineering and nanotechnology were giving us the power to remake the world, but a realistic and imminent scenario for intelligent robots surprised me. It's easy to get jaded about such breakthroughs. We hear in the news almost every day some kind of technological or scientific advance, yet this was no ordinary prediction. In a hotel bar, Ray gave me a partial preprint of his then forthcoming book, The Age of Spiritual Machines, which outlined a utopia that he foresaw, one in which humans gain near immortality by becoming one with robotic technology. On reading it, my sense of unease only intensified. I felt sure he had to be understanding the dangers, understating the probability of bad outcomes along this path. Now, when we did the show on Thursday about killer robots, killer autonomous robots, I had seen a comment in chat, and then somebody left a comment on the show, both recommending that I read the Unabomber's manifesto, Krasinski. And I never read the manifesto of the Unabomber. And back in the time when the Unabomber was loose and they had finally located him in the deep woods, I was still kind of asleep and had thought that the man was probably just a crazy person living in the woods. Well, interestingly enough, not only did SLC drop me the manifesto yesterday and I started reading it, but also in this very story by the CEO of Sun Microsystems talking about his unease in meeting Ray Kurzweil and this merging of man and machine back in 2000, no less, he quotes the Unabomber's manifesto. It says, "I found myself most troubled by a passage detailing a dystopian scenario." And if you scroll down to the bottom, it actually states the passage that is quoted is from Krasinski's Unabomber Manifesto, which was published jointly under duress by the New York Times and the Washington Post to attempt to bring his campaign of terror to an end. Yes, he had a campaign of terror, and that's what he led us all to believe. But let's read this. "The new Luddite challenge." And yes, I think we should all be Luddites. And all of us who have been in technology know what's coming because we can see it. Those of us who are just learning about this can also see that it's coming. And the Luddites are the ones that are hoping for the big fat EMP to take it all out. The new Luddite challenge. "First, Let's postulate that the computer scientists succeed in developing intelligent machines that can do all things better than humans can do them. And in that case, presumably all work will be done by vast, highly organized systems of machines and no human effort will be necessary. Yes, the utopia that they're trying to make us believe is going to happen when there's no work left for us to do. And we heard Ray Kurzweil say that it will just expand our brains so we can do all kinds of creativity, just like the last time our brains expanded and we came up with art and language. Either of these two cases might occur, and machines might be permitted to make all of their own decisions without human oversight, or else human control over the machines might be retained. If the machines are permitted to make all their own decisions, we can't make any conjectures as to the result because it is impossible to guess how such machines might behave. We only point out that the fate of the human race would be at the mercy of the machines. Now, how crazy is Kaczynski in bringing all this out when we have 1,000 of the brightest minds in the world now signing a petition saying this very thing? Back to his manifesto. It might be argued that the human race would never be foolish enough to hand over all the power to the machines. But we are suggesting neither that the human race would voluntarily turn over power to the machines, nor that the machines would willfully seize power. What we do suggest is that the human race might easily permit itself to drift into a position of such dependence on the machines, ding, ding, that it would have no practical choice but to accept all of the machines' decisions. People, this is exactly what's happening. As we're reading research, finding out that the average adult attention span is a whole of 8 seconds, which is less than a damn goldfish, because of our dependence on the machine, on our mobile devices, on computers, and how we rely upon tools like Google to find information versus our own memory, like we used to have to memorize things. That's exactly what is happening. All right, back to the manifesto. As society and the problems that face it become more and more complex and machines become more and more intelligent, people will let machines make more of their decisions for them simply because machine-made decisions will bring better results than man-made ones. And didn't we just read that last week or the week before, even in regards to trading on the stock market, about how humans tend to be unreasonable and not make good decisions, so maybe the future of trading should be made by artificial intelligence? Didn't we also read and hear a lot about augmented reality and how they're really planning on us being able to embed the ability for accessing the network, the future cloud, today's internet, by just a thought? And eventually they've even predicted that we are going to be embedded with a chip, so that chip will be able to know us from birth inside and out and be able to aid us in prioritization of our day, of our life, and in making decisions. This is 100% the plan. All right, back here. Eventually, a stage may be reached at which the decisions necessary to keep the system running will be so complex that human beings will be incapable of making them intelligently. At that stage, the machines will be ineffective. Will be ineffective control, and people won't be able to just turn the machines off because they will be so dependent on them that turning them off would amount to suicide. And I'll tell you, we're just about at that point now. They've talked about how much damage an EMP would do because everything is running on the network. Everything is running, even on electricity for that matter. But then electricity is just the basis of running the global internet and all the applications that are running our banks, that are running our utilities. Everything is running on a network and on computers. We've already reached that point. We have reached the point of societal destruction in most of the developed world if all of the computers went away. And it's only going to get worse, people. Wait until you see there was a new executive order inked here over the last few days having to do with the machine. All right, let's read one more paragraph out of Kaczynski's manifesto. On the other hand, it is possible that human control over the machine may be retained, and this is what we need to start looking at. In the case that the average man may have control over certain private machines of his own, such as his car or his personal computer. Now, we just found out that our cars are not our own anymore, that there are so, I don't remember, even 6 to 30 PCs running underneath the hood of a car right now, and that the car companies are going to depend upon the DMCA, Digital Millennial Copyright Act, so you can't even fix your own vehicle anymore. And the personal computer, remember, there's no free lunch, people. We talked about this last week as well. Microsoft giving away Windows 10. I'm going to read you the privacy statement on Windows 10. Don't do it. Don't upgrade, because it gets even worse than we thought it was now. Anyway, back to this. This man was a visionary, the Unabomber. In the case that the average person may have control over certain private machines of his own, such as his car and his personal computer, but over a large system of machines will be in the hand of the tiny elite, just as it is today, but with two differences. Due to improved techniques, the elite will have greater control over the masses. And because human work will no longer be necessary, the masses will be superfluous and a useless burden on the system. Ding, ding, ding. As we see that now China is going to have an entire factory, and we'll look at the story if we get there, that'll be run 90% by robots. And even Bill Gates has said by 2020, a good majority, 50%, I believe, of all jobs will be replaced by robots. And as, oh, I don't know, we have animals dying left and right, not only in the oceans, but from plagues, from wildfires, from droughts, from extreme temperatures, from all these freaky mad science gone mad, never before seen diseases. Food prices go through the roof. There isn't enough to go around, people. Don't think that we aren't going to become the useless eaters that they've always talked about, because that's exactly what is happening. A useless burden on the system. Back to this. If the elite is ruthless, they may simply decide to exterminate the mass of humanity. Ding, ding. And if they are humane, they may use propaganda or other psychological or biological techniques to reduce the birth rate until the mass of humanity becomes extinct, leaving the world only to the elite. Oh, my God. I can't even believe that I never read this before. And again, we have Mr. Bill Gates coming out with the permanent birth control about a month or two ago. Permanent birth control that they can implant at puberty. And you will never have to have children, those pesky kids. Back to this. Or if the elite consists of soft-hearted liberals, they may decide to play the role of good shepherds to the rest of the human race. They will see to it that everyone's physical needs are satisfied, all right, that all children are raised under psychological hygienic conditions on drugs, and that everyone has a wholesome hobby to keep him busy. And then anyone who may become dissatisfied undergoes quote-unquote treatment to cure his quote-unquote problem. And yes, this whole brain project that is being undertaken globally by not only our universities, but National Institutes of Health, all of our big tech companies, DARPA, Google, Motorola, Microsoft, they're all going to make sure that they understand the brain and how to fix things like unhappiness, depression, PTSD, to make sure that anyone who's unhappy in the future will have a cure. Oh, yes. Of course, life will be so purposeless that the people will have to be biologically or psychologically engineered either to remove their need for the power process or to make them, quote unquote, sublimate their drive for power into some harmless hobby. These engineered humans may be happy in such a society, but they will most certainly not be free. They will have been reduced to the status of domestic animals. Bravo. I can't even believe how amazing that section is. And it goes on much longer than that. And maybe we can start reading a section of it a day, because I really would like to get through that. But I have a lot more that I want to get to today. So that was out of Wired Magazine from 2000. This story by Bill Joy is actually 11 pages long. So maybe we'll dig into this a little bit each day over the next few weeks. That little excerpt was out of the Unabomber's Manifesto. But talking about being dependent on the machine, so I see out of the Office of Science and Technology Policy on whitehouse.gov on the 29th, which was what, Thursday, Friday? Wednesday. Advancing U.S. Leadership in High Performance Computing. Over the past 60 years, the United States has been a leader in the development and deployment of cutting-edge computing systems. High-performance computing, more affectionately known as HPC systems, through their high levels of computing power and large amounts of storage capability, have been and remain essential to economic competitiveness, scientific discovery, and, of course, national security, isn't it all? So today, last Wednesday, July 29th of 2015, President Obama issued an executive order establishing the National Strategic Computing Initiative, known as the NSCI, to ensure the United States continues leading in this field over the coming decades. Now, interesting that we had heard back a few weeks ago that the Google's rival in China, Beidou, had just developed the fastest supercomputer in the world using Intel processors all chained together. And shortly thereafter, and I mentioned this, the State Department came out and banned Intel from shipping them processors. So we're going, holy shit, it's time for an executive order to make sure that we keep the lead. And don't worry about it, because when we have this computing, National Strategic Computing Initiative, it's going to help us not only keep up on records of every single one of you, where we are going to be surveilling you to a cellular level, but also it's going to be helping us with our brain project, with the development of nanotechnologies and all these new mad science gone mad things that are out there. We're going to be able to keep a beat and keep the storage on everything. This is going to be the mother of all machines. It says this coordinated research, development, and deployment strategy will draw on the strengths of departments and agencies to move the federal government into a position that sharpens, develops, and streamlines a wide range of new 21st century applications. Guys, this is the brain of Skynet. DARPA said they developed it, and now we got to come up with the storage capability. It is designed to advance core technologies to solve difficult computational problems and foster increasing the use of new capabilities in the public and private sectors. Remember, we read an interview when Ray Kurzweil first accepted the position of Director of Engineering at Google, and they had asked him about his budget, and he had said that his budget was unlimited. And remember, he has that woman, I always forget her name, Regina Duggan, former director at DARPA, who's working with him also at Google. And Google and DARPA and Kurzweil are all in bed together. So don't think that this doesn't have something to do with that. The HPC, or the high performance computing, has historically focused on using numerical techniques to simulate a variety of complex natural and technological systems, such as galaxies, weather and climate, molecular interaction, electrical power grids, and aircraft in flight. The largest of these machines are referred to as supercomputers. One measure of a supercomputer performance is flops, or floating point operations per second, indicating the number of arithmetic operations performed each second. And over the next decade, the goal is to build supercomputers capable of one exaflop, that is 10 to the 18th power operations per second. Now, I'm going to pop over because this is kind of a long press release, but there is a story then that came out from Science Alert. Obama pledges the U.S. will build exascale supercomputers within the next 10 years capable of 1 billion billion calculations per second. The White House has announced the establishment of its National Strategic Computing Initiative this week, which is designed to keep the U.S. at the forefront of high-performance computing well into the coming decades. The key to keeping up will be the development of a giant exascale supercomputer in which the U.S. government says it'll build within the next 10 years to perform incredibly fast and complex operations. The announcement comes as scientists and technologists grapple with the issue of technological bottlenecks as the demands of computational research in the 21st century dramatically escalate in its complexity. This problem is particularly compounded when working with big data and the algorithm, such as storing and processing the massive amounts of genomic information involved in gene sequencing, which requires extremely fast computers and extremely capricious data banks. So what is an exascale computer? Well, supercomputers are measured in terms of how fast they are, specifically in how many operations they can perform every second. We just read this is going to be 10 to the 18 operations per second, or 1 billion billion operations per second. By comparison, most computers in the world today are measured in terms of gigaflops, not exaflops. But this is not just about speed. As concluded by the President's Council of Advisors on Science and Technology, the big data age means high-performance computing and must now assume a broader meaning encompassing not just flops, but also ability to efficiently manipulate vast and rapidly increasing quantities of both numerical and non-numerical data. The benefits of such amazing super computational power will be felt in all sorts of fields. The White House lists a few examples, including new ways of modeling turbulence and dynamic flight conditions in aviation, better ways to compute health and genomic data, ding, ding, precision medicine, and smarter methods of teaching artificial intelligence systems how to learn via access to greater databases of examples of which to draw upon. Oh, my. This is the brains of Skynet. It says if Google's deep dream is what today's computers are capable of coming up with, and if we haven't looked at deep dream, but if you haven't looked at it, we'll have to look at it. They have an AI computer doing dreaming, and they've been putting out pictures based upon the images and things that they've scanned, and they're frightening. Talk about a frightening example of what the alter world could look like. But this dude out of Science Alert says, if Google's deep dream is what today's computers are capable of coming up with, we can't wait to see what tomorrow's exascale computers will be getting up to. No, we can't wait to see it at all. I was wondering here if they gave anyone that was involved in this technology forum for the federal government, and I guess we'll have to look that one up. Anyway, let's go back. So nothing is free. Nothing is ever free. Windows 10, they're giving everyone a free upgrade. Now, up until this point in time, I don't ever remember Windows handing it away for free. Typically, they'll do, like, you know, if you own it, $29.95, $59.95 for the upgrade. And hey, lo and behold, we're not supporting the old one, so they pretty much forced your upgrade. But Windows 10, they're giving away free to all Windows 7 users at least, and I'm sure Windows 8. Well, listen to this. This is out of BGR.com. Windows 10 is spying on you on almost everything you do. It starts out, Windows 10 is amazing. Windows 10 is fantastic. Windows 10 is glorious. Windows 10 is faster, smoother, and more user-friendly than any Windows operating system that has come before it. Yes, where have we heard that propaganda before? Windows 10 has everything that Windows 8 should have been. addressing nearly all of the major problems users had with Microsoft's previous generation platform in one fell swoop. But there's one thing you should know. As you read this article from your newly upgraded PC, Windows 10 is also spying on nearly everything you do. Now, we knew that they had backdoor holes. But what we don't remember is that Microsoft also has a full-blown global cyber patrol center running out of Seattle, where they are working with every law enforcement agency across the globe to crack down on cybercrime. So now, as all the Windows users across the world upgrade to their new and improved, wonderful, faster, most awesome software ever for free, remember, nothing is ever free. You just handed them every key, every search, and oh, by the way, every file on your desktop, every message, anything you ever did is now going to be able to be sucked through one big fat siphon called Windows 10. Back to the story. It's your own fault if you don't know that Windows 10 is spying on you. That's what people always say when users fail to read through the company's terms of service document, right? Well, here's a link to Microsoft's 12,000-word service agreement, and some of it is probably in English. We're pretty sure it says you can't steal Windows or use Windows to send spam, and also that Microsoft retains the right to take possession of your firstborn child if it chooses to. And that's only one of several documents you'll have to read through. Actually, here's one excerpt from Microsoft's privacy statement that everyone can understand, and this is what I want to read to you. Quote, finally, we will access, disclose, and preserve personal data, including your content, such as content of your emails or other private communications or files in private folders, when we have a good faith belief that doing so is necessary to, one, comply with applicable law or respond to valid legal process, including from law enforcement or other government agencies. And remember, not too long ago, Obama inked an executive order or action to bring all of the private companies into the government fold. So the NSA no longer was necessarily spying on you. But all of the tech companies and your employer and everyone else under the guise of national security and keeping you safe were going to be spying on you just to make sure you didn't step out of line. Back to the story. Number two, protect our customers. For example, to prevent spam or attempts to defraud users of such services, or to prevent the loss of life or serious injury of anyone. Number three, operate and maintain our security of our services to prevent or stop an attack on our computer systems or networks. Number four, protect the rights or property of Microsoft, including enforcing the terms governing the use of services. However, if we receive information indicating that someone is using our services to traffic in stolen intellectual, or physical property of Microsoft, we will not inspect a customer's private content ourselves, but we may refer the matter directly to law enforcement. If that sentence sends shivers down your spine, don't worry. As invasive as it is, Microsoft does allow Windows 10 users to opt out of all the features that might be considered invasions of privacy. Of course, users are opted in by default, which is more than a little disconcerting. But let's focus on the solution. So anyway, I will put this into the notes of the show. If anyone upgraded to Windows 10 and wants to opt out, you can go there and find this story. They give a step-by-step on how to do it after the privacy section. So now let's get back to Microsoft and biometrics. Again, biometrics sucking you into the machine. They want to get rid of anonymity on the internet and on all devices for your protection. You've had biometrics on cell phones for a while. where you could use your fingerprint. They've been using facial scans, voice prints. Well, Microsoft and Windows 10, I talked about this, and now I found a story out of phys.org. Microsoft is implementing a new kind of biometrics, and it's one that uses all different kinds of biometrics, including like actions that you perform or the way you move or the distance between your fingers. It says Microsoft describes hard-to-mimic authentication gestures, photos, messages, and bank account codes, so much more that your puny little human brain can't remember anymore. Sit on a person's mobile device, and the question is how to secure them without having to depend on lengthy passwords. Yes, vendors promote other solutions all around, including the ability to lock your phone or unlock it with swiping gestures. But a new patent filed by Microsoft is proposing a gesture unlock method not outdistanced by any others, to make the gesture work only for you. Microsoft in his patent describes why technology would be an improvement over other vendor swiping functions. According to the patent, for instance, a person simply observed by a user unlocking his phone over their shoulder can easily figure out a four-digit passcode or the gesture used to unlock the device. As a result, an authentication technique that prevents such over-the-shoulder attacks is more desirable. So what is this new technique? Well, Microsoft has now patented a new technique that captures biometric information such as finger position, finger length, angle between the fingers, and more to provide authentication information with a simple gesture to make sure it is actually you making the unlock request. Apparently, the system will be able to measure the angles between a user's finger, the exact timing of when the finger touches the screen, the size of your finger, and how much pressure is applied. And it turns out these aspects are unique to each and every user out there. The patent also said that during a training session, the user may repeatedly perform an authentication gesture and values of multiple different biometric features can be detected from the training authentication gestures during that training period. A person can perform the authentication gesture to log onto the device, and biometric feature values can be detected from the authentication gesture during login and compared to those during a training session. Guys, I mean, as they start acquiring information, now who knew that your distance between your fingers and your speed and your finger length were something that were only individual to you? But don't think that all this information isn't going to be databased in your supercomputing dossier to be used in the future to identify you no matter where you are. All right, but to keep us tied to the machine, because remember, the machine is what's sucking us in and allowing all of this to happen. Don't worry, because Google's internet balloons will soon be connecting all of Sri Lanka with Wi-Fi. Yes, let's make sure we spread the technological plague to every corner of the earth. Google is teamed up with the Sri Lankan government to deliver broadband internet to every region of the nation on the island, making it the first country in the world to have universal internet coverage. Wow, how wonderful is Google? The initiative is part of Google's Project Loon, which aims to provide cheap or free, yes, free people, nothing is ever free, Wi-Fi to people in remote rural areas around the world via a fleet of huge helium-filled balloons floating way up in the stratosphere, and I'm sure they'll be spying on you. Right now, of the 22 million mobile phones being used in Sri Lanka, only 2.8 million of them are connected to the internet. So if the initiative goes ahead, it could change a whole lot of lives, yes, and suck 20 million more people into the surveillance apparatus. Hopefully in a few months, every person and every device on the island will then be covered by 3G, says Sri Lankan's Deputy Minister of Economic Development. Since launching in 2011, Project Loon has been testing the technology high up above New Zealand, Brazil, and Australia, and the U.S., but it is finally ready for launch for real. This week, Google signed a preliminary agreement known as a Memorandum of Understanding with the government of Sri Lanka, which both parties will do their best to make happen. Right now, the plan is to have everything up and running in the next year, with 13 balloons to be launched in March. But if that isn't bad enough, hold on to your seatbelt, because Facebook has now also revealed plans for a drone-based internet in the sky. Facebook on Thursday revealed more details about its plan to find cost-effective ways to provide internet access to the 10% of the Earth's population that live far from cell towers or landlines. The solution? Drones the size of a Boeing 737 launched by helium balloons. My God! Isn't this just the most amazing thing you've ever heard? Powered by the sun, each 1,000-pound drone would fly lazy circles of more than 11 miles above the Earth, providing broadband-level internet for people in a 50-mile radius below. And, oh, I'm sure they'll have Super HD Argus cameras on them as well, and probably some sort of kill mechanism once they identify an insurgent. The team's dream is a, quote, backbone of internet using lasers in the sky. Oh, yes. Lasers. Lasers in the sky, people. These planes, dubbed Ekalina, Latin for eagle, would be unmanned. So unmanned aerial drones for internet. Oh, isn't it such a wonderful thing? Each would spend 3 months aloft before slowly floating down to Earth like a feather, it says, for refit. Vice President of Engineering at Facebook, Jay Parikh, says the effort is part of a project launched a year ago by Facebook's Connectivity Lab to provide internet access to the 4 whole billion people around the world who currently lack it and are unable to be tracked. Yes. All right. And if it isn't bad enough, and this one article would not load, and it is about Amazon. Here we go. Amazon leads the push to create air traffic rules for drones. The first wave of long-range commercial drones should be allowed to operate in narrow, low-altitude bands and must agree to be tracked, according to Amazon's vision of the future. Amazon says the only ways that drones can dart across the sky without hitting each other or threatening traditional aircraft is to require the equivalent of flight plans and drones communicating their positions to centralized computer systems available to all operators. A team at NASA's facility adjacent to Silicon Valley is leading the government's efforts to create a drone air traffic control system, dubbed the Unmanned Aerial System Traffic Management, and more than 100 companies have expressed interest in participating in NASA's effort, and at least 14 have already signed agreements to work with the agency, including who? Google, Amazon, Verizon, and Harris Corporation, who has a big agency here in Rochester, New York. But hey, don't worry about that, because as drones are flying everywhere in our happy, friendly skies, the federal government is warning.
Some breaking news overnight. The rising threat of drone weapons. CBS News has learned that the Department of Homeland Security has sent a warning to police agencies around the country about the possibility of drones being used as weapons in an attack. Jeff Pagaz is in our Washington Bureau with more on the story. Jeff, good morning.
Good morning. Law enforcement sources say terrorist organizations and their associates are using UAS or drones with video capabilities for surveillance operations overseas. CBS News has learned that officials believe that currently they cannot rule out similar uses here in the U.S.
Yes, the terrorists, like our federal government and all of the tech agencies,
to support violent activities. Federal law enforcement officials believe the growing availability of drones increases the chances of one being used to carry out a terrorist attack or commit a crime.
Yeah, so, you know, they put this out, and then there was a story the other day about the man who had the drone flying over his teenage daughters in his backyard.
Hillview police say this is a first for them. While they say they can understand the man's concern for privacy, they stand behind the charges that he did break the law. Along Early Wood Way in Bullitt County, neighbors couldn't ignore a certain buzz Sunday evening.
What is that? Didn't you see this thing fly by?
Cindy Diebold said for the first time in person, she saw a drone and what looked like a camera on board.
What in the world are they looking for?
She wasn't the only one on this block concerned about the tiny unmanned aircraft. So was William Meredith, especially when he says it stopped to hover over his fenced-in backyard where his two daughters were sitting outside.
You know, wanted to see if it was going to stay there, and it did, and then I reacted.
Meredith said he went and got his 12-gauge shotgun and took matters into his own hands.
They had it low enough that he hit it.
It's an invasion of privacy. We were in our own yard. Had he been flying around and never stopped over my house, we wouldn't be having this conversation.
So are there rules for drones? The FAA strongly encourages those flying for hobby or recreation to follow certain safety guidelines. Some include fly below 400 feet, keep the aircraft within your sight at all.
And there we go. We're about out of time. This poor guy now who shot this drone out of the sky, flying over his house with a camera, is facing reckless endangerment charges. All right, guys, we're going to continue this tomorrow, but make sure you stick around. Brand new show Monday, Wednesday, and Friday following this show. The Age of Fishing with Lonnie Clark is up next. Mr. Brandon Turnbull has a new show tonight, so make sure you stick around for that as well. Neil Foster is on tonight. Our Interesting Times with Tim Kelly. Truth on the Tracks. Unlock the Door with Michael Cross. Cutting Through the Matrix with Alan Watt. And Anti-Media with Nick and Divian 11. All right, guys, have an awesome Monday. We'll catch up with you tomorrow. Take care.